Polling firm Gallup, that's a U.S. polling firm, does a survey in the U.S. every year where they ask people how much they trust different professions, like auto mechanics, school teachers, accountants, lawyers, daycare providers, a whole range of potential professional groups. For the 20th year in a row, nurses came in first place. Pretty happy about that, I hope, right? living with a nurse, I'm not completely happy about this, but they are the most trusted profession in the U.S. Number two was medical doctors, but the gap between nurses and medical doctors was huge. And then, of course, below them were primary school teachers and then pharmacists. Figure that, pharmacists. Nothing against pharmacists, though, just to be clear. I would say the king or perhaps queen of professions, at least as far as trust goes, is definitely nurses. Sadly, clergy were way down the list. Yeah, a little disappointing, right in the middle of the pack. I suppose it's not to be unexpected. We've lived through televangelists like, you know, Jimmy Swaggart and such, and all their scandals. We still hear about stories of pedophilia in the Catholic priesthood. There are lots of stories about the corruption of Christian clergy in the news today. There's one of a mega church pastor in Southern Ontario who's got himself into trouble. At one time, well, a long time ago, clergy rated much higher in the Gallup survey. Maybe not quite at the level of nurses today, but quite way up there with medical doctors and primary school teachers. Not anymore. And Gallup, you know, says part of it's to do with the scandals. Another part is the general decline in religiosity in the society. Dude, that's had some impact on it. Now, clergy still rank higher than other professions like auto mechanics, bankers, nursing home operators, lawyers, TV reporters, car salespeople, and politicians. Oh, geez, that's great, isn't it? So it's not a completely lost cause. Now, I have to admit to you, as I say, that I'm a bit irked that, you know, my profession is less trusted than Sally's. And I'm thinking, why is that the case? Like, how does the public sift through people's work and differentiate the level of trust between the professions? And I think the basic explanation is this. We trust people we believe who can put our best interests at times ahead of their own. We trust people who can place their own needs second when they care for the needs of others first and their service towards others. That's who we trust. I think that's why we often don't trust salespeople very much. Because deep down we think salespeople's primary goal is to make the sale, make the cash, whether it's good for us or not. Real estate agents are not held as high on the professional list of trust as nurses are. What's the difference? Over the month of October, we are looking at the theme of stewardship. 5 weeks on different aspects of stewardship. I think most people, when they hear the word stewardship, immediately think of wildlife or some natural preservation project. But stewardship really simply and easily means this: the careful and responsible management of something entrusted to one's care. Now, it could mean wildlife. It could mean a special nature spot. It could mean a building. We tend to steward our buildings, but it could, of course, apply to a host of other things that we have relationships to in life, like our finances. There's a stewardship of finances. Or stewardship of health. We need to be stewards of our health. We need to be stewards of our relationship with others. Marriage has a certain aspect of stewardship to it. You've been given the care and concern of the person in the world you love most. A sacred trust has been given to you of their heart. And you better exercise careful and responsible management of that heart that you've been given care to, or your marriage is going to suffer or even fail for it. Parenting has a certain aspect of stewardship to it. We've been entrusted with the care and concern of our children, and we better take good care of them if we want them to become the persons they're meant to be. This applies to our friendships, too. There's an element of stewardship in our friendships. People reach out to you and you never respond back to them, then you're damaging the quality and character of your friendship with them. The use of time in our lives requires stewardship. Much of what we want to accomplish in life comes down to time and how we use time. If we exercise time with a careful and responsible concern, then we often can accomplish things that we otherwise would never get around to doing. Church has been entrusted with the mission of Jesus. We've been asked to be stewards of Jesus' mission in the world. Something important of importance has been given into our care. We're called to exercise this stewardship, that is, bring careful and responsible management to Jesus' mission, which is to bring about God's kingdom of love on earth. And when churches live out this sacred task, this sacred responsibility, then good things happen. When churches begin to try to live out their life without the love of Christ at the center of it, then we've moved far away from what Jesus has given us care to take care of in our lives with you. We have failed to be faithful practitioners of Jesus' way in life. So stewardship is a foundational reality in life for us. The quality of our stewardship affects pretty much everything we do. Everything we do. Today I want to focus on the stewardship of our relationships, both in the church and outside the church. What does stewardship look like in our relationships with others? What has been entrusted into our care that we need to exercise responsibly? And I think about what Paul was saying to the Romans today about how it's important, first and foremost, to build each other up rather than to be right about something with each other. It's more important that we get along with each other in love than to get our own way. And I think for that reason it's important, maybe even critical, to learn how to live with people who see the world differently than we do. It'd be so much easier if we would just go to a church where everybody thought the same way we did, everybody behaved the same way we did, where everybody dressed the same way we did, but that wouldn't teach us very much about what it means to love our neighbor. I think it's important that we be in church communities where people are very different from each other, and where we learn how to steward our relationships and love with each other, even in the midst of the difference. Otherwise, we could spend a lot of time arguing with each other, disputing with each other, perhaps even withdrawing from each other because we don't know how to deal with the differences that are really, in the end, merely an obstacle to the deeper love we're called to live with each other. We often have very strong ideas of about how people should behave and what they should think and how they should look. That's true inside the church, it's true outside the church. The culture's just the same way. Some new person comes into any circle of people and suppose their attitudes and behaviors don't conform to the prevailing expectations of this group. The temptation of the group would be to try to change them explicitly or implicitly, directly or indirectly change them and make them into the standard form of the group. And if it doesn't work out, people would do their best often to avoid that person. Paul mentions about how people who belong to the church in Rome have different ideas about what they're to eat. There's no consensus in the group of what they're to eat, and both groups are followers of Jesus. That is, the meat eaters and the vegetarians are both very committed to their practice of eating, and they get into some dispute, some disagreement with each other in the church. It's not hard to imagine that happening in any church, any group of people. They're disputing what's the appropriate food a Christian should eat, what's not appropriate to eat. It's so easy to imagine vegetarians and meat eaters attempting to demonstrate the righteousness of their point of view with the other group, why those other ones over there are wrong in their choices. But is that wise stewardship of our relationships with each other? Is that wise stewardship of our relationship with other members of our community? Paul says we're not to despise each other because we don't agree on all the details that make up our common life together. Let the one who abstains from meat, he says, and the one who eats meat, let them not despise each other. Hold each other in contempt. Let not judgment come between you and others in the church because you don't agree on all the details of life, like who to vote for, or where you should spend your money, or what are the priorities of the way you live in the world. You know, in one of the amalgamating churches that I won't name by name, St. Paul's, I was told that Trillium, I was told when I came to Trillium that people argued about the color of the walls in the sanctuary. They actually argued about it. And I don't mean just argued about it. They became heated over the different choices that they had. They became factions against each other. People left the church over what the color of the walls should be painted. Isn't that insane? I would say there was an absence of good stewardship with respect to the relationships between the members going on in that conversation. And I'm not blaming any group. I'm just saying somehow in the midst of the issue and everybody trying to be right, people forgot about what the core importance was, which is to take care of the relationship. And I'm sure that people stayed or left the church not because of the color of the choice of the walls was made. I think it has to do with how the decision was made and how they felt about their life here in the midst of the arguing. People so often want to be right instead of trying to get along with each other. We have to learn how to live with each other's differences. Can we learn to live with each other's differences even? Maybe even celebrate it. I'm glad that you don't all see the world the way I do. It's frustrating, I must tell you at times. It's frustrating we had a few decisions at council last Wednesday that I had a point of view on and others didn't share it. It was frustrating in the moment, but I'm still glad I'm in a church where everybody doesn't see the world the way I do. And I hope you feel the same way about it. I've talked to a lot of people over the years at Trillium about different things. Did you know that we have people in the church who are pro-life? Did you know we have people in the church who are pro-choice? Did you know we have people who are in between on the issue of abortion? Can we live with the difference? Can we live with the difference? Can we respect the fact that we won't necessarily agree on the application of the gospel of love and our moral decisions in this life that we're living together? You know, we can live, I think, with the differences as long as we keep our focus on the stewarding of each of our relationships with each other. That's what we got to keep the focus on. We've been entrusted with the sacred task of welcoming each other in the name of Jesus Christ. We need to remember that we're all guests at the Lord's table. We're all guests. No one has privilege here. And we don't have to agree with those others who have been called to the Lord's table. We're simply called to love each other as the Lord loves us. That's the new commandment we've been given. And to see any differences that we might have here in their proper proportion, always subservient to the task of loving each other in a careful and responsible way. Trillium have people here who support MAID, that's medically assisted death, and Trillium has people here who are deeply troubled by it. We each see the application of the gospel being lived out in different ways. We live with the differences between us, and we can get along together. We can have a common life together because we've committed ourselves to something even more important. We might not agree on all the details, as I'm saying, but as long as we take the quality of our stewardship seriously, we will prosper in our relationships here. If we forget to steward our relationships with each other, we will inevitably move to a world of disagreements and discontent. As Paul says to us, let the details of our lives, let the application of the gospel be lived out in honor to the Lord. Whatever it is, that is the key. It is to God who we are answerable to. None of us are permitted to insist on our own way in these kinds of matters. Our relationships with each other are the key characteristic that defines us as a community, and we're called to steward those relationships in love. Now, I suppose there are some beliefs and values that are not negotiable at Trillium, and we've listed them. They're up on our banners here, our bedrock beliefs, our core values. They're found there. But even here, we allow each other the dignity to apply the common understanding of our Christian faith at Trillium with a degree of freedom. There's no guidance about how you're supposed to vote in elections here. There's no guidance in how you're supposed to apply the gospel of love in specific situations. You're going to have to figure that out by your own consciences. As long as we're going about our lives with respect to God's holy love, which Christ came to reveal to us, then we can live out the formulated beliefs and values in a way that is acceptable to us in our common life together. See, because again, in the end, it is God to whom we're answerable to, not each other. In the quality of love, yes, we are accountable to each other. In the character of our stewardship of our relationships with each other, absolutely. But in the specific application of what it means to love one another, I don't think so. Otherwise, we live under the petty tyrannies of each other, the tyrannies of each other's expectations and judgments. And Jesus didn't come into the world to free us from one set of petty tyrannies in order that we might impose another set of petty tyrannies upon each other. Often people experience religion as a form of petty tyranny. That's not what we're supposed to be about. As Paul says, Jesus lived and died and lived again so he could be our master in love across the entire range of life and death. And I'm back thinking again now why nurses are the most trusted profession in the U.S. and probably Canada. And I think it's really simple. Of all the professions, nurses bring a sense of stewardship to the relationships they are involved with as they serve people. It's always about people. Nurses meet people in the most vulnerable situations, but they're not there to judge them or to impose their petty tyrannies upon them. Nurses spend time with patients in a way no other healthcare provider does. Nurses are the one constant presence in a patient's care. And nurses get firsthand experience of other people's pain. If there's a problem, they're the first to advocate for the patient because they're the only healthcare provider who really sees the whole picture. They are the eyes and ears of the healthcare system. They understand better than anyone else what the patient is going through. And much of the real work of healthcare is done by nurses, and their impact is the most recognizable of all caregivers. Again, this is about the stewardship of relationships. Nursing is not so much about technology, although there's lots of technology. It's about the relationship. Nurses steward the relationship with people. They take an impersonal healthcare system and they make it personal. You know, it's not uncommon for Sally to go to a patient's funeral service, to a celebration of life service. Doctors almost never go. Physiotherapists, occupational therapists, technologists, orderlies, they never go to a patient's funeral. Nurses? Not uncommon. Why? Because the relationship is so different. And it seems to me that clergy, including me, and congregations, including you, could do well to emulate nurses in how we relate with others. See, because it's always about stewarding the relationship. If we want more esteem in the broader society, if clergy want to move up in the rankings, our congregations want to have more esteem in our culture, then we need to behave more like nurses. And I think we're doing that at Trillium to some degree already. I think we are. We're not perfect in this, of course, but we sure could take another level up. That would mean we would have to become more dedicated to stewarding our relationships with each other. We'd have to be more careful about how we talk about each other, how we communicate with each other. That would mean putting our own point of view aside more often, mean committing ourselves not to winning the argument, but of loving each other. Not trying to convince others why we're right, but about trying to find the common ground that we can move forward together on. It means instead of sharing the journey of life in a way that brings victory to us, we commit ourselves to moving forward as a people at a deeper level, attuned to each other's needs and needs in life. You know, that song, Everything is Beautiful, you know, everything and everyone is beautiful in its own way. It's true. It's true of a starry summer night. People are beautiful in their own way, too, even in all their differences. People have many differences. They're beautiful in their differences, even when we don't understand them. And we shouldn't really care in the end what people look like, the length of their hair, or the color of their skin. We want to know what's underneath the surface and in the essence of their hearts. We want to go even beyond what people believe or even how people act into the essence of who they are. That's what we're called to come together upon, to share and to steward, to nurture in one another. That's the way that Jesus has taught us to live together. That's meant to be our way here at Trillium.